Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The one aspect about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine that stands out most is media coverage. Never in the history of corporate media has coverage been so biased and one-sided. And it does not stop there. Questioning the standard narrative is akin to treason and subject to censorship and cancellation. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests, Vladimir Goldstein in Peperon. He is the chair of the Department of Slavic Studies at Brown University. And in Oslo, we have Glenn Diesen. He is a professor at the University of Southeastern Norway, as well as author of the book Russophobia, Propaganda in International Politics. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Glenn here in Oslo. You know, one of the things in looking at media coverage, and that's what I do for a living, I cover Western media primarily. And, you know, when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine going on 5 months, you really don't really learn much about the conflict. Instead, they're trying to convince you how to feel about the conflict. There's lacking, the context is lacking, even geographical knowledge is pretty scant, and there's reliance upon Vogue magazine photo shots of the Ukrainian president and his wife. I mean, by stressing how to feel, it is easier to get away without contextualizing it. As a way to try to allay all of the suffering that Western publics are feeling. Glenn?
Well, what you're describing is a good description of propaganda, because at least the way I've defined it is propaganda is to a large extent a way of convincing an audience by not relying on rational arguments. So instead you play on stereotypes and feelings. And obviously this build-up to this propaganda war we're currently in, it just follows Russiagate, which obviously was a great example of how feelings kind of blurred out all of the facts of the matter. Now, obviously, all countries use propaganda to some extent, but we see during wars, especially, that this is ramped up. And this is because it's necessary to mobilize public consent for a conflict. So this is why we see this during these times. What the propaganda aims to do is build up these stereotypes, of course, to have, simply put, one good versus evil. And if you accept this stereotype and all information comes through this, is filtered through this prism, facts, as you said, it doesn't really matter anymore, because if you're good guiding something evil, well, it was necessary. And this is usually how you see it. And again, it's a long history of this. And Russia's always been seen as, if you will, the other of the West. You know, they've been they're barbarians to our civilization. They've been the Asians to us Europeans. You know, they're the authoritarians to our liberal democracy. So this is how all information has to be filtered, essentially making a, you know, big Harry Potter story out of the news. And this is very, very problematic, because people can accept those stereotypes and get stuck with those emotions. They don't look at the facts anymore. And then, in my argument, everyone loses.
Yeah. Vladimir, what's interesting here, I'm calling this program the phony war. And of course, this is a reference to the time when this, during the Second World War, after the war started in when Nazi Germany invaded Poland, and then before the invasion of France, it was called the phony war because there wasn't much going on, particularly on the French front. But there is a real war going on. But the propaganda that Glenn was referencing, it's getting a bit thin, because if the Russians are the bad guys, why are we in the West suffering? They're not making a very compelling argument. Vladimir.
Well, I would say we have to look at who is the object of propaganda. And it's clear that the object of propaganda is much less Ukrainians, who actually bear the brunt of the war and are being killed and suffering. So if they hear some report from BBC, or if they look at the pictures of the Zelensky, they're not affected by that. They know that their brothers or sisters have been, hurt or wounded or killed or bombed and so on. But the object are the gullible Western public who has to support this A, front that everything is united, everything is cool, and B, is this kind of the desire to send money to give some kind of extra work to military industrial companies. It's clear that sooner or later, this narrative will hit the very hard reality on the ground. Because, every time they tell the West, our weapons help, Ukrainians are going to smash Russia, Ukrainians are going to conquer this, Russians are running out of their last ammo, and sooner or later, even the Western public, not just Ukrainian, the Western public would say, well, you tell us this, and now we hear that Zelensky out of the blue is trying to get 70-year-old people in the army. Now he says everyone from Donbass region have to move away. Something doesn't click. And then, Western propaganda and propagandists will end up with a big egg on their face. I think they're trying to postpone it as long as they can. But, you cannot fool reality.
Glenn, we're kind of nerdy, all three of us on this program, because we appreciate history and geopolitics, and we're from three different countries. But as an American, the postmortem of the ending of the war in Southeast Asia. My goodness, that South Vietnam government was really, really corrupt. And then a year ago with the exit of Afghanistan, my goodness, that was a really corrupt government. And now, before the conflict started on February 24th this year, Ukraine was considered one of the most corrupt countries in the world. So, this is going to kind of come full circle as billions and billions of dollars are being poured into the country, money, military equipment, ammo, the whole works here. But this talk about corruption is, like I said in my introduction, almost treasonous. Go ahead.
Yeah, and well, of course, the irony is ahead of this, before this war, you had the Western media, BBC, all them making documentaries. They made documentaries about, the horrible corruption in Ukraine. You had documentaries about what they referred to as Nazi battalions. But now, after the war began, we now see that this all became suddenly Russian propaganda, and you're not allowed to say it anymore. Also, calling it a proxy war was also enough to get you canceled. But then, of course, all the American political leadership also began to refer to it as a proxy war in the media. So now apparently it's okay. So it's difficult to follow. But again, this is the huge conformity. Because you have to choose between two positions. And this is often very artificial, because, of course, you can say you're opposed to the Russian attack on Ukraine, because they are, you're not supported. But if that's your position, you also have to conform to the whole narrative that this is a big rivalry between democracy versus authoritarianism. And that also makes China complicit, if you will. And then, but of course, so facts in this narrative, it kind of disappears, because obviously, Zelensky's government is supposed to be this new inspirational, a beacon of democracy. Zelensky's the new Winston Churchill. And it, of course, it becomes very artificial, because you can, what if you want to talk about cold facts? For example, Zelensky's support for these draconian laws against the Russian speakers or ethnic Russians. How about banning the opposition party? How about arresting Medvedchuk, the main opposition leader, or placing all media control under the state? These are objectively undemocratic and actions. But if you mention these facts, it becomes called Russian propaganda. But why? Is it not true? No, because now you're creating doubt about the Ukrainian government. So showing support is necessary. And that's why it's very dangerous, this kind of propaganda, because it makes all our journalists in the West into soldiers in this information war. And, we're destroying our own trust in the media. We're destroying our own institutions. And if we want to enter this conflict, we should be able to say honest things, such as, if you want to convert Ukraine into frontline against Russia, this is not compatible with democracy. And this is why we see that Ukrainian democracy, to a large extent, was snuffed out after 2014, when Ukraine was to be made into this new front line. But again, we don't talk about the facts. Instead, we have these vogue articles. You know, you have this, again, always this emotional appeal. We have the good Zelensky versus Putin, which has become the embodiment of evil. And then we don't have to discuss security interests. We don't have to discuss facts because it's a good man versus evil man, and you pick your side.
You know, Vladimir, when Glenn was describing how the goalpost, as it were, is changing, there's an amazing similarity to COVID. I mean, when you can say something, when you can't say something, you can say something at one point, you get canceled, but months later, it's common parlance. I mean, it's very interesting the kind of trajectory, both COVID and the way we're allowed to talk about Ukraine.
I think, you know, what Americans are good at is A, reaching the masses, manipulating masses, and maybe learning from this experience. What I hear in all this is like, you know, that McCarthyism all over again, and McCarthyism worked for quite some time until some very serious, honest voices in the United States arose and say, this is not the real picture you're describing. You're creating a reckless, dangerous situation, which it destroys our democracy, destroys our country. The same thing is happening here. I don't think if Americans want to help Ukraine, this is not the way to help Ukraine by allowing one person ban all the parties, ban all the opposing. This is not the help in Ukraine. This doesn't help anyone. Any country develops through, you know, dialectics, through kind of challenges, through trying to improve. And just having this McCarthy methods, it works for a while. And Americans know that, and they use it. And they use it on Germany. They use it on Finland and Sweden. They manipulate it. But, you know, it's people, common sensical people should sooner or later realize that this is not a fair description of the story, which, because it's false, it doesn't help anyone.
Well, and Vladimir, on top of it, there was some have called for an investigation of Ukrainian oligarchs, which is very interesting because that would encompass the narrative before February 24th that there's corruption in Ukraine and a lot of money, Western money, and goodwill. I think, you know, you can say that for at least on the part of some people. But that, you know, that is again that kind of creeping narrative. Yeah, we remember the corruption. Maybe because of so much money, we should have some oversight here. Rand Paul, he was attacked mercilessly. He's like, well, I'll vote for the money, but can we find out where it's going and what we're doing? And I mean, he was just absolutely destroyed in the media. But now there's more and more talk. Yeah, maybe we should have some kind of oversight here. You just have to know how to play the cues, I suppose. Glenn, real quick before we go to the break here, there's going to be a major offensive, most likely, in Ukraine, but it's going to be a Russian one, not a Ukrainian one. I don't know if Western media is prepared to deal with that.
No, I don't, because, Vladimir Golsin pointed out correctly before, the main people we're trying to convince is the Western audiences, supplying the money and the weapons. So I think that for this reason, you need to keep the momentum going, to keep the support going. And the core of this is to say, you know, the Ukrainians are winning, the Russians are losing. This is why we're kind of seeing over the 5 months this perpetual claim that Ukraine's always on offensive.
Jump in here, Glenn. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Okay, let's go back to Glenn. Glenn, before we had to go to the break, you were trying to make a point. Please finish up.
Yeah, I was saying that continued support by the Western publics requires this promise of victory, especially with this kind of self-sacrifice. So every week, you know, we have these new stories about Ukraine launching a spectacular counteroffensive, you know, from Kharkov to Kherson. However, the media never reports that nothing comes out of this, except for huge losses. And also, we have to say that Russia is losing pretty much every week. And we hear that, you know, Russia's losing, you know, running out of ammo every week. Soldiers in Russia have lost their morale. Putin is sick. You know, Putin is almost about to be toppled. The Russian economy is imploding. I mean, it plays out all over again and again, but never anything comes out of this. So, but again, it fits with the story that, you know, Ukraine's the underdog, destroying the Russian military, and Russia's simply only targeting civilians, of course. So, and this is where the emotional aspect comes in as well, because the media only focus on civilian deaths on one side, but on the other side, it can't be mentioned. And this, you know, goes back to the idea that if you have some sympathy for the opposing side, then like Rand Paul, you might be seen as a traitor because now you're spreading propaganda, because it's not the facts that matter. It's whether or not you can drum up enough sympathy for the right side.
The real tragedy is that there hasn't been a call for negotiations in peace. You know, instead of taking a side, people of goodwill and power should have said, we have to end this conflict, but you're not getting that from the left. By the way, what's really interesting, what Glenn just said, you know, all of the things that we're told to believe, the Russian economy is failing, Putin is sick, low morale in the military, but all of those things apply to the West. I mean, governments are falling in the West. The inflation is horrific. Energy crisis, food banks in the UK, all of the things they're projecting of what's happening in Russia is actually happening in real time in the West. And you can't cover that up, okay? Because that is the lived experience of people. When you go to fill up your tank in your car, no propaganda is going to convince you one way or another. It's just expensive. Go ahead.
Yeah, the same thing applies to the price of gasoline, driving the cars, and, you know, and heating and cooling. So I think it's a paradox. Is, you know, I think the Western propaganda, they can lie about distant places, like, you know, Ukraine, 90% of the people cannot pronounce Bakhmut or Bucha or this or that. So it sounds all kind of mythical, strange, bad Russian. But, you know, when you go to your own store and see the prices, it's collapsing. And I think it's a mistake of a Western estimation of both their own weakness and strength and Russia. Because they now, I see it even BBC says, well, yeah, we were kind of wrong about the strength of Russian economy. You know, but basically, just think about it. You are pro-American, gung-ho, you want your country to succeed. To succeed, you have to know your enemy. If you don't know your enemy, how can you do anything? If you just lie to yourself, tell your lies that China is a giant on legs of clay and Russia is going to collapse in 2 days, then what will happen? Hitler was lying to his own people. Oh, we'll march to Russia in 2 days. And then what? You know, they destroy the Europe, they destroy themselves. So I think we keep on seeing as a result of this lies and, you know, lies to themselves. That's a very dangerous thing.
You know, Glenn, and not only lies, but I think that there's a great deal of arrogance in play as well, because the Russians were pushed back from Kiev. That's the story here. Well, I don't know what the military planning was. I don't know what that was all about. But there's this impression, and you get these armchair generals that were generals in wars that were lost, by the way, by the West in the Middle East primarily. But they're trying to convince maybe themselves and the audience that the Russians fight the same way as we do. Destroy all the infrastructure. Let's start thinking about Iraq, you know, destroy the waterworks, destroy the electrical, destroy everything, and then you go in. That's not the case. So again, this kind of arrogant projection of how they fight a war, everybody else does, which is not the case if you are familiar with the facts on the ground. Glenn.
Yeah, and what you mentioned about Kyiv is an important one, because that was that's a narrative which we kind of kept for so long. Because in the beginning of the war, of course, Russia pushed all its troops to the outskirts of Kyiv, hoping to get the concessions it wanted, and again have this war done by the weekend. However, this didn't work. But of course, the problem for the Russians were they had these long unprotected supply lines, which made them very vulnerable. So they abandoned this position, but this was at the starting point. Ever since, Russia has pursued a very different strategy. But again, the narrative still reflects the Kyiv era, which, you know, Ukrainian tractors are defeating Russian tanks. And, you know, so, you know, the mighty Russian military machine is being destroyed by the Ukrainians. We also have these stories about, you know, marchers, the ghost of Kyiv, we all remember, this airplane who just shot down all the Russians.
Snake Island.
Yeah, Snake Island, you know, this, you know, go away, you know, Russian for the Russian warships, but this proved also to be fake, and it doesn't matter because the narrative still stays. They still have these signs which they show to the Western media that, you know, as if it wasn't fake. So it is this need to hold on to the narrative, and this is also what's very problematic, as you know, Vladimir pointed out. You kind of forced to take this weird positions, and you know. So, for example, I'm personally horrified by what's happening in Ukraine. It's devastating. But if you're saying, listen, we should, as you said, push towards political settlement, talk to the Russians, at least, even if it doesn't pan out, start the dialogue now to see where the possibility is for making peace. Well, that would be anti-Ukrainian. Now I'm accused of being pro-Russian because now I'm effectively saying, well, if I want them to make a peace now with the Ukrainians, that means, well, that means they have to make some concessions, and that means asking for the Ukrainians to surrender. So you're not allowed to call for peace. That is treasonous as well. So and so you have to take one position, which is the pro-Western one, and with it you have all these strange positions which doesn't necessarily make any sense. So it's very confusing. And just one final note is it goes beyond the narrative. It's, as George Orwell pointed out, it also implies manipulating the language. So, for example, what things meant before is not anymore. So, for example, what's happening with the sanctions, the economic recession now hitting across the West? Well, as we saw with the Biden administration, it has simply changed the meaning of recession, and oof, we're not in recession. This is what we saw in Mariupol as well, when all the soldiers surrendered. It wasn't a surrender, it was an evacuation. As it turned out, when they put down their weapons and surrendered and ended up in Russian captivity, this was an evacuation. It was repeated across the Western media. So we just, you know, changed the language instead of, in order to fit with the narrative. It's quite extraordinary, and it's not good for us either. It's not a pro-Russian, anti-Western argument. It's bad for us in the West as well.
You know, Vladimir, one of the things that I find very interesting is that because there is no dialogue, Blinken and Lavrov did speak, but for the readouts is that talking about this prisoner exchange, which I'm for the interested parties, I'm sure it's very, very important. But in the scheme of things, you know, it doesn't bode well for anytime soon the conflict in Ukraine to come to an end. And I would posit, because you know, Zelensky is not interested, and the Europeans have been cowed into silence. The Russians will say we don't have a partner. There's nobody competent to talk to in Washington. They're all buffoons. They don't really understand what they're doing. The Secretary of Defense says our plan is to weaken Russia. Well, I guess that's sending a signal to the Kremlin of what the, you know, what kind of interlocutor they have. And I would posit that this conflict will come to an end. When Russians are ready for it to end. And I'd like to point out to everyone, this conflict will come to an end under Russia's terms and timetable when Russia has come to the conclusion, and I'm thinking about the two letters that were sent in December on December 17th, one to NATO and one to the United States, about Russia's security guarantees. Russia will determine it unilaterally, and they'll say they're done. Thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's the reality on the ground. And the West can deny it by, you know, suppressing alternative speech, by, you know, introducing all these things. But, you know, sooner or later, that's how it will end. What is said about this, that to get there, a lot of people will be killed, and tremendous damage to the most basic democratic principles will be done. Because basically, behavior of Blinken and Biden, this is childish behavior. United States, NATO, they were talking to Soviet Russia. They were talking to Soviet Russia when it invaded, you know, Czechoslovakia. They were talking to Soviet Russia. They were negotiating. They were concerned with the peace. They were concerned with the freedom of speech. They were concerned. Now, all of a sudden, you know, over this conflict, they just suppress the basic principles of U.S., you know, that, you know, try to write something on Facebook which goes against the narrative, bam, done. You know, Tucker Carlson, one of the most popular TV personalities, 70 million people listen to him. Oh, no, he's a declared Russian agent. This is just childish behavior, which is a result of which U.S. hurting themselves, not only just, you know, hurting, you know, millions of people in the Slavic lands, but, you know, they're hurting themselves by this. That's what's disturbing.
You know, Glenn, I want to end on, I mentioned in my introduction about the risk of cancellation. And this, there's been an asserted attempt to cancel all of Russia, Russians, Russian culture, Russian history, the works, okay? But I would posit the West is self-canceling itself in many ways, because the global South and China, they're not on board. They will not get on board. And the West finds itself isolated, something that we're talking about language. Russia is isolated. At the same time, Putin and Lavrov are traveling, have a busy schedule. There's no global consensus against Russia on this. And I would posit the West is isolating itself. The global South no longer fears the West and doesn't respect the West anymore. Last word goes to you, Glenn.
Oh, I agree. And I think that this has been one of the major shocks here in the West is, again, this is a narrative that the whole world is united behind behind the West's effort to isolate Russia. But then we found out outside of NATO, there's not that many countries at all that supporting the West instead. It doesn't mean that they're supporting Russia. It just means that they see this for what it is. It's a proxy war between NATO and Russia at the cost, the heavy cost of Ukrainians. And they don't want to pick a side in this. Everyone's a Russian propagandist. This was even the argument of the Pope, that obviously NATO has provoked this. But again, he also falls in the category of Russian propagandists these days. So it is a shame, because this has been the strength of the West, this being able to have this open discourse and challenge established ideas.
I want to thank my guests in Norway and in France. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Rostock Rules.